Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati, baseball edition. Ah, it's opening day. I'm here with my co-host, Pearl Love, and we have a special guest today, the voice of Reds Radio, Tommy Thrall.
Voice of the Reds, Tommy Thrall. What a perfect special guest as we are sitting here just hours away as we record this from opening day. I'm excited.
You can already start to see from our office, like the banks, like kind of getting ready for what tomorrow is going to look like. The banks are going to be just thousands of people will descend on the banks. Mother Nature seems like she's going to cooperate.
I think the weather forecast is solid. You know, a little bit of rain in the forecast, but a couple years ago, opening day was almost snowed out. So I'll take the forecast that we have right now.
I know. I mean, I've worn everything from shorts to winter coats to opening day. You never know.
Oh, yeah. Hand warmers, blankets. So it'll be fun to talk to Tommy Thrall. I can't believe he has been in the booth now for 5 years, 4 years as the full-time voice of the Reds. So, but before we do that, we do have some news happening this week as well.
There's so much news. That could be anything. I know. We already planned what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, even in a busy, busy news week, we did have a fairly significant big story break this week in terms of the city of Cincinnati. And that's the somewhat surprising termination of the fire chief.
Yeah, Cincinnati Fire Chief Michael Washington, been with the department nearly 30 years, really kind of came up in the firehouses. He was kind of like the last pick of the last administration of being who the fire chief was going to be. But I have never heard a whisper of like a real big problem. If you're the city hall reporter, you hear the problems in every department. Like that's how the beat goes. But nothing that rose any red flags. Still a week kind of before what was happening, I was clued in to that the chief was being accused of allowing a hostile work environment for the female firefighters, a very serious allegation. And there had been an investigation by Women Helping Women, a group that, you know, really helps women, in, you know, in with domestic violence and get their lives back together. Just really this amazing group we're lucky to have in Cincinnati. And they did a look at things, but even they didn't say they recommended that the chief be fired, but they said there's some problems in a report. And the chief was fired on Friday. And I have to say, no one ever gets fired at the city almost.
Or at least not that quickly. At least not that quickly. And, you know, Chief Washington, seemingly a popular fire chief. You know, we've had him on the podcast as a guest before. He's pretty visible in the community. But as you said, there were complaints. The city brought in quietly a group, Women Helping Women, to kind of evaluate. They made some recommendations, but they also were pretty, you know, even though you said they didn't, you know, they didn't go as far as saying the chief should be terminated, they did say that any effort to make a better environment for women who work for the department was that he was definitely not participating and almost standing in the way of any potential improvements. Would you say that's accurate?
I would. So his charge papers of why he was being fired actually don't mention, the actual charges don't mention anything related to sexual harassment. They are kind of a long list, though. He's charged with insubordination, unsatisfactory performance, nonfeasance, malfeasance. I mean, those are city words for sure. Incompetency, inefficiency, and other failures of good behavior. So this is very like a city document of what, you know, the problem was. But I have heard the chief himself is very surprised about what's going on. And he's retained a lawyer who has publicly said, we will be filing suit against the city. for unlawful termination.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. We don't have the best window into what they might have done. But it does seem like there might be a due process issue here with how quickly he was terminated. You know, you went through the list of the reasons for termination. A few of those were directly related to his being asked to put together a plan, an improvement plan to improve the environment there, that, you know, he had some deliverables along those lines that didn't occur. So we'll see. I think, you know, depending on how this goes, if he does file a lawsuit and then there is an opportunity for any types of hearings or discovery, we'll probably get some more details. My gut tells me there probably aren't a lot more details because this seemed to happen very quickly on the part of the city, which, to your point, it takes a lot usually for someone at his level to lose their job. So I was stunned by how quickly that happened.
So, you know, I had the opportunity, unfortunately, this unfolded very quickly. And I would say that our reporting needs to be bolstered. And I'm working on a story right now. But you know what? The story that I'm working on is the absence of all of these details in any sort of public records, history, personnel file. So the story is kind of going in the direction like how we got to this place with a lot more documentation than we had on Friday. And, you know, the news dropped very quickly. And I always applaud any city official who's willing to talk to me and allow me to ask questions. But unfortunately, I had a window of 10 minutes and no time to look through what documents were available before I did that. And I would go back in time and certainly ask some other questions that I've not had a chance to do. I'm seeking to get answers to the questions that I do have. I do think the public deserves a lot more answers. They deserve a lot more answers about what's going on with the female firefighters, certainly. And also, and I've said this maybe in other radio interviews, so I should say it on my own podcast. Something that has always disheartened me as a woman when I covered the budget, and I've written about this in budget stories. Since I have covered City Hall in 2014, the fire chiefs, there's been more than one fire chief in my time covering City Hall, have come, and the fire union president have come to City Council during the budget process and said, our fire houses are inadequate for the women who work there. There are firehouses in this city where women share a bathroom with a man. These are places women are being asked to live 24 hours a day, and they are not being given accommodations that are appropriate for 2023. I heard, and I haven't seen it, but I'm certainly going to seek it out, that one bathroom has a clothesline and a sheet over it to give the women privacy. And to me, the city needed that. The city never has any money. Surprise. They've said no. They've said no, 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 no. And quite frankly, more than a year ago, the city told me they were going to do a facilities report, and then we're really going to know, right? I don't know how we really want to improve these houses. Maybe there's better places to put firehouses. They do need to be where the population is. I 100% agree with that. But after putting off what's been asked for at least a decade, they're like, we need to do a facility study. I'm like, oh, well, great. I'll be looking for that. Wrote a story about it. That hasn't even started. So I'm like, well, why not? Like, council approved it. They set aside the money in the last budget. And so we're really looking at where this all comes together and not just, you know, what happened with the chief, but kind of like what's going on with the fire department in the city.
So more than just, quote unquote, boys behaving badly, it is a kind of top to bottom issue for the city when it comes to, do they have the right leadership? Do they have the right facilities? Do they, you know, getting down to, like you said, the bathrooms to accommodate a modern era workforce? Would you say that's fair?
Yes. And to make it where female firefighters want to come work for the city. In the policing and firefighting are not traditional, you know, female jobs. That both departments are working on that and have bolstered the forces with females. But that is a work in progress. And you have to make, you know, the facilities, you know, palatable and say for a woman to say, I actually want that job and this will work. And I also want to say something about the Boys Club of the Cincinnati Fire Department. Because since this all happened, and that was really kind of a narrative out of Friday that people were saying, oh, boys will be boys. That was almost like a too simple sentence that even was coming out of City Hall and is not actually true. I mean, the Women Helping Women report does say that the chief was the problem. And the women themselves I'm hearing are saying that, no, they don't actually feel that way about all of their male colleagues, that it's not a boys club. And so I'm going to try and include as much of that as I can. This story is also, as a woman being a reporter, it's very, I have asked several people for comments. I'm several like female firefighters, and I'm just not really getting a response. And I do have to understand that and honor that, because if something happened to them, it's a very private thing. And that is a very difficult thing to talk about. And so I did, I have been able to see some of the underlying data from Women Helping Women, but unfortunately, even that is very identifiable to the women who filled out surveys, because there's so few women that you're like, oh, well, if it's a captain or a lieutenant who said this or said that, you're like, oh yeah, her. And you don't want to do that. So so it's a little bit slower than I would like, but we're trying to really balance everything and be sensitive in our own reporting about how this is all going.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, at this point, it would be hard to imagine the chief getting his job back. I think his, you know, the fact he's lawyering up right now is all about reputation management, trying to make sure he has, you know, he's compensated the way he should be and everything like that. So, you know, there is going to be, you know, one of the for sure outcomes about this is there will be the opportunity for the city to bring on a new chief and probably, to your point, we'll see that, you know, it's probably, you know, this situation is larger than the chief, probably, that there is an opportunity here for the city to really evaluate what this department needs to look like.
I have to say, one of the biggest problems in the report that we saw is that the chief was asked to do a climate assessment, which is a super serious report with an outside firm and surveys and a lot of detailed information and almost like an audit, which may not have gotten to the, in a typical climate assessment, gotten to the heart of what they thought the problem was. And that wasn't done. And now the city manager is saying, well, we'll wait till the new chief comes to do a climate assessment. But it does seem that if a climate assessment was needed, you know, more than a year ago when one was asked for, one's definitely needed now. I mean, I don't think we're hiring, she has said, the city manager Cheryl Long has said, there will be a national search for a chief. That is not an overnight process. It is not. And so, of course, there's an acting chief, but is it time to do a climate assessment? I think there's some questions to be asked there.
For sure. All right. Well, much more to come, as you said. Never a dull moment when you're covering the city.
No.
And we didn't even talk about the railroad, but just briefly, because you broke some news on that this week. It appears that after it was going to die a slow death at the state legislature, there's a compromise. I didn't see that coming, especially from Bill Blessing.
Oh, I did not see that coming. And oh, if you could see my texts. Oh, I told you so, Sherry. That's what my texts look like from last night. But you know what? Good for them. That they added some. Say, so there was definitely a lot of questions about how the sale to Norfolk Southern was going to go. And the state lawmakers first go at it was like, ooh, is Norfolk Southern the best buyer? But they quickly changed tax to, do we trust Cincinnati leaders? Speaking of politics, do we trust Cincinnati leaders with all this money? And what does this look like? Is it the best thing? So it really became like a fiscal thing. So they put in some guardrails into the legislation that they were having trouble getting through. And it does seem like everyone is in agreement. And like the main thing that was added to go ahead, take this, you know, sell the railroad. If citizens agree, go ahead. Then going to get $1.6 billion. You create a trust, you spend the money from the investments of that trust. They're like, okay, but they put a safeguard in there. If the trust ever falls below 75% of whatever the highest number is, they built that in for inflation, right? So if it were to fall below $1.2 billion, 75% of $1.6 billion, then it freezes. There's no spending from it and no set money can go to the city budget. And so it's really, you're not dipping into the nest egg too much. And it seems like everybody's agreeable with that, you know, safeguard. And, you know, they, of course, have all along been like, the trust is amazing. It'll always be tons of money. So yay for that. And it seems like this is going to get the green light from the lawmakers up in Columbus. And we'll be waiting for that next week. And then the question, the other safeguard is that you have one shot only to ask voters. And you can only do, you could do it this November, you could do it in the primary, presidential primary next year, or the presidential, you know, general election in 2024. Those are your three bites of the apple. If you take the first bite and it doesn't work, you have to come back, explain yourself to us.
Yep.
Back to mommy and daddy, explain what happened. And so it seems like, we haven't heard from the rail board, which is like, I could say that sentence every day of my life. We haven't heard from the rail board, but it seems like this is going to be a go.
That is funny that you say that. It's kind of like the rail board walked up one day and said, I'm just going to set this here, and then walked away and let everybody go apoplectic on it because, you know, it sparked a big debate within the city. We've had so many guest opinions with people writing and sharing their opinions in favor of the sale or against the sale. You had state lawmakers led by Bill Blessing, you know, really pushing back against it and questioning whether it made sense to, you know, let this sale, which we're talking about a $1.6 billion sale here. And so anyway, just an interesting week when it comes to the prospect of Cincinnati selling its railroad, which we should remind people, we are the only city that owns a railway. So it's kind of a unique, only in Cincinnati story. And you've been all over that one too. But you know what?
I'm
ready to talk baseball. No, I'm ready to talk baseball.
I do want to give listeners like a quick insider tip.
Okay.
If you're interested in learning about these different opinions, because opinion pieces don't always float to the top of Cincinnati.com. You know, my stories get a chance usually kind of in the front, big city news. And you've seen my reporting. I appreciate you listening and reading. I really, really do. But when I was looking for some old stories that I wrote myself, if you go to Cincinnati.com and you go in the search button and you just put in Cincinnati Southern Railway, all of the opinions come up. Like there's so many even more opinions than stories I've written. This really has sparked, you know, things on our opinion, a good conversation on the opinion pages of the Inquirer. And so that's a quick way if you want to go and look and see, you know, what people are saying about it.
I'm glad you said that, Sherry. That was a good pitch. But I'm still ready to talk about baseball.
Me too.
All right. So we are going to now shift to our special guest segment. A conversation with the voice of the Reds, Tommy Thrall. And here we are, special guest time, and a very timely guest, and probably a very busy guest. So we're very grateful that the voice of the Reds, Tommy Thrall, is with us. Tommy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, you know, you are in your duties as voice of the Reds, calling all the spring training games, doing the Reds Hot Stove League. You'd have no lack of opportunities to talk about the Reds and the upcoming season. And we're going to probably talk about that a little bit. But I think what would be fun to do today for our listeners is to talk about Tommy Thrall, which which I know probably makes you a little uncomfortable. We don't normally hear you talk about yourself too much. Just to tee things up, you're starting your fifth season being the announcer for the Reds. Overlapping that first season during Marty's retirement. And then this is the start. I can't believe it's already been four seasons where you have been alongside with the Cowboy, Jeff Brantley, part of the dynamic duo in the Reds radio booth. Can you believe that you're starting your fourth season in that role?
Not at all. I still can't believe that I've had one season in this role. I mean, it's funny. The old saying, you know, that people like to say, how are you doing? I live in the dream. Well, that's literally how it is for me. I mean, this is truly a dream come true. And it was funny. I was home at Christmas and my dad asked me, we were just sitting there talking in the kitchen. He goes, do you ever kind of take a step back and look over everything and think, is this real? And I said, yeah, actually still, even to this day, quite a bit. And it's wild to think that it's a reality. It not just being a big league announcer, which has been my dream since I was a little kid, but having the opportunity to do that with this organization where the radio and the broadcast period means so much to the fans and the history, the legacy, you know, with Marty and Joe and, you know, all the way back to Wade Hoyt, even before that, Red Barber. I mean, it's incredible to be a part of what has been an unbelievable broadcasting legacy here.
You know, it actually is. And, you know, I was wondering, when did it, you said ever since you were a kid, when did you really decide that, you know, I want to be a baseball announcer? And who were you listening to back then? I don't even know where you grew up. So who did... Who were your idols when it comes to broadcasters?
Yeah, I grew up in Kansas City. So when I first fell in love with baseball, I was listening on the TV side to a guy named Denny Treese, who would go on to actually become one of my mentors. He did the TV for not that long, really. But I remember sitting in the living room. My parents were watching the Royals game. And his voice just kind of captivated me. And I was like, this guy has a really cool voice. And then I started watching. And then from there, I kind of started to get into baseball a little bit. For some reason, I'd always been fascinated by the radio as long as I can remember. And then it kind of dawned on me that, hey, there's a job out there where you can travel all over the place, talk on the radio and watch baseball for a living. And I said, well, that's the job I need to have when I get older. So it was kind of, I was probably about 10 years old, really, when it all hit me. And, you know, once I really fell in love with baseball and broadcasting, Denny Matthews and Fred White on the radio side were the two guys that I really grew up listening to. Fred White left the organization. I think the Royals cut ties with him somewhere in the late 90s, early 2000s, and they hired a guy named Ryan LaFever, who's still there. And, you know, Ryan actually became a huge help to me and kind of a mentor to me as well, because I used to send my stuff to him. He would critique it. He actually, when I was in college, let me sit in with him and Denny doing a game. And that was huge for me. So once I got to college, that's when the ball really started rolling. I started doing a lot of work. I was broadcasting anything and everything that people would let me talk into a microphone about. I mean, quite literally, I did gerbil races at one point at my town fair, county fair. So there's not much I haven't done.
That's fantastic. So you kind of got on my radar when you joined the Reds organization, or at least, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but you started in terms of the Reds broadcasting the AA team in Pensacola, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yep. And so
7 years down there. Yeah.
7 years in Pensacola. So definitely paid your dues, but no guarantee. It's not a preordained path to get to the big league broadcast booth. What do you think happened there in your case? A little bit of luck, a little bit of timing. When did it become apparent to you that you were in serious contention to not only broadcast on the major league level, but following the footsteps of Marty Brenneman, which probably had, when it comes to following in someone's footsteps, had to be probably one of the most daunting parts of stepping up. When did that start to take shape?
Yeah, I think probably the end of the 2018 season. There's a lot of layers to that question. And I'll start with this. Excuse me. You know, whenever somebody like Marty is retiring, a legend, a guy that's really carved out an unbelievable following, and for good reason. I mean, Marty, obviously a Hall of Famer. You always hear the saying, you don't want to be the guy that replaces the guy. You want to replace the guy that replaced the guy. So I called a friend of mine shortly after I got the job, and he goes, well, how are things in Cincinnati? I was like, good. They're going to bring me back. And he goes, oh, great. He goes, I was afraid you were going to be the sacrificial lamb after Marty's retirement. I said, I'll be honest with you. There was a part of me that had the same concern, but I was going to enjoy the ride regardless. So I'm very, very grateful that it's worked out to where I wasn't, you know, just here for a couple of years to transition over to somebody else that would be a more permanent replacement. So I'm very grateful to the Reds and the Reds fan base for allowing me to stick around. But yeah, like to answer the other part of the question, I think, you know, when you go back, the 2018 season, I had gone out to spring training that year and basically went out on my own. I was obviously still with the Wahoos. I was kind of getting to a point where I couldn't do minor league baseball much more. It just financially wasn't making a lot of sense. I had about 3 or 4 different jobs that I would have to do just to, not just with the team, but overall. You know, I was a fill-in anchor, sports anchor and reporter at our local ABC affiliate. I did college football, basketball, sometimes softball, sometimes volleyball at a Division II school in Pensacola in the off season. Also hosted their coaches show, and I was doing the Wahoos games. And I also had a football, basketball TV package that I was doing. So I had all these jobs. So I basically had no free time. I'm living close to the beach and I hardly ever have time to go to the beach, and the beach bum and me couldn't stand that because I love my beach time. So
me too.
It's great.
You know, that's pretty amazing, because I think most people wouldn't assume that that's a vow of poverty, announcing on the minor league level that you have to have all these side gigs just to make that work, and to do that for 7 years. You know, what a demonstration of your commitment to that. But you were sort of at the end of that runway, that it was time to, you know, time to do something?
It was. So that was kind of the point where I'm like, all right, this 18 season, I'm putting all my chips in the big league basket. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then it's time for me to find something else to do. And but it wasn't, I mean, that really overall, it was 15 years in the minor leagues. The last 7 just happened to be in Pensacola, which was, you know, I had some great stops along the way. Pensacola was the best, probably by far of all of them, but I had fun everywhere I was. But so it's the 18th season. I've decided, through some suggestions from some folks with the Reds that I happen to get to know pretty well over the years, hey, go down to spring training, see if you can get on the air during some spring training games. So I did that. And I, you know, kind of needled our producer Yid. I said, hey, if I come down, can I trade a few interviews for maybe a few innings during some spring training games? And he talked to Karen. They were able to make it happen. Karen Forgas, they were able to make it happen. And it felt good. I heard some good feedback from some people around the organization that I didn't necessarily expect to be paying attention that I was down there. And it kind of caught my attention. I thought, well, maybe there's a chance I'm on my radar, or I'm on the radar a little bit. And then I was in Biloxi. So fast forward to the middle of the summer, I'm in Biloxi, and my broadcast partner in Pensacola, who's now doing games with the Diamondbacks, he would travel when it was a drivable distance, like for a road game. So we're in Biloxi. He's there with me. We're getting ready for our game. We've got the Reds game on the TV, but we've got the radio broadcast overlaid through the MLB app. And the schedule for 19 had just come out. And Marty made the comment, I would have liked to have gone to Houston one last time, because the Reds were playing the Astros, I guess, in Cincinnati. And I thought, well, wait a second. Did he just hint that this is going to be his last year? So immediately I call Yid and I said, hey, what's going on here? He goes, well, Marty's got there is maybe some talk that Marty might be retiring. I don't know if it's going to actually happen or not. We'll see. And so then he said that you might have an opportunity to do some games over the over Marty's golf tournament. You just make sure you have your phone handy in case somebody calls. I said, well, all I'm trying to do is find out if I'm on the radar. He goes, well, you're definitely on the radar. It's like, all right, well, that's good to know. So, and then sure enough, the next day my phone rang and it was Karen Forgas. And she goes, well, would you like to come up and fill in for Marty on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday in September during his golf tournament? Are you free? Well, I had a high school football game I had to call on Friday night on TV, a college football game on Saturday, and a Blue Wahoos playoff game on Sunday. I said, no, I'm free. I'll be there. And so that I think that kind of turned into a de facto audition at that time. And I was very thankful for the opportunity. And then kind of after that, Karen said, well, I think we'd like to use you a little bit more next year. We'll figure out what that looks like. And then, and the weeks and months that followed kind of put everything together. And that's when things came together for that 19 season.
So I feel like we're definitely talking about baseball, but there's a massive career advice in here from being willing to do what it takes to get the career you want, like in saying, okay, it is hard. I have to cobble together all these jobs and seeing a cue and calling and being like, am I on the radar? And like, this is really just, it's career advice packaged in a fun career.
Yeah. Well, it is. And I think that's the thing. It's a delicate balance. And it's, you know, you want to make sure you stay relevant without being a pest. You know, I think, and that's something that, you know, young broadcasters ask all the time. Well, how do I get there? And the hard part, you know, like Beryl was saying earlier, there is no clear cut path that leads you to the big leagues. For some, they go a network TV route. And, you know, they have an agent that helps them, you know, work their case for other teams and big league openings. For me, it was nice to be able to work with an affiliate that was affiliated with a great organization like the Reds. I met a lot of great people, which I think helped a lot. You know, there's some networking that goes on there, too. And it's not necessarily networking where you're trying deliberately to network because maybe these people one day can help you. It's just be a good person and they might help you without you even trying. And I think that's another part of it too, that I think can get lost from time to time is just genuinely being a good person. People I think will notice that. And that's another thing that I tell people, because there are times where you'll see, and I'm sure it's true of any industry, but I've seen it with, you know, young people in broadcasting where maybe they're only good to the people that they feel like can help them. And I think that after a while, that can be something that's transparent. My parents did a great job raising me in that I try to treat everybody the same, regardless of who you are. And I'd like to think on some level, maybe that's helped out a little bit in this journey.
So one of the things you said that I had to laugh at was you don't want to be the guy that follows the guy. You want to be the guy that follows that. I would say now in retrospect, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a huge fan of Tommy Thrall, but I was impressed that you just came on as Tommy Thrall. You didn't put yourself under the pressure of like, all right, I have to match Marty's bigger than life personality. Because I think that would have been seen as, you know, maybe disingenuous or maybe, you know, too much too soon. I'm going to, you know, not be any different than I was during the fill-in times. I'm going to focus on the game of the field, focus on what's going on the field. I'm going to let the cowboy provide the comic relief, you know, at the risk of maybe even saying, like, you know, erring on the side of bland's not the right word, but erring on the side of like nuts and bolts rather than trying to be that big personality, that might have been the perfect play in retrospect. Was that intentional or is that just who you are?
Yeah, I think a little of both. The one thing, you know, having Cowboy is a huge plus. I mean, that can't be understated. I mean, he is unbelievable to work with. The personality is one thing. The knowledge of the game is another. The way we just kind of mesh, you know, we have a lot of similar interests. I always tell people that, you know, we're friends, not just on the air, we're friends away from the ballpark as well, which helps a ton. And that's obviously been fostered over the last 4 or 5 years. So, he has been incredible in this whole journey. And so there is an element there of just kind of letting him be him and setting him up when I can. And just making sure that I capture the game. That's kind of my job. The other aspect of it too is, you know, I knew coming in I was never going to be Marty. I can't be Marty. There's only one, and it doesn't matter who came in after him. There's never going to be another Marty Brenneman. So I had to be me.
He's still Marty.
He is still Marty, absolutely. He is. He's still around. He's still him, and we all love him. So, and that's the other part of it too. I mean, I love Marty to death. So, you know, I'm not going to try to be somebody I'm not just because that's who he was. I can't do that. That would be a colossal failure, and it would be a disservice to Reds fans as well, because you can't be that. So. I knew that coming in, and I just kind of always felt that all I had to do or all I could do was just be me every night and be the best version of me I could possibly be. And hopefully that would be well received. Hopefully it would work, and just work really hard every night to just be the best I could possibly be at being who I am. And it's funny that you say that, because there was a scout that I ran into last year. And a lot of the times the scouts will listen to games while they're in the stands scouting. And it was a scout that I knew from my Pensacola days. And he stopped me in the press dining room and he goes, "I don't want you to take this the wrong way." He goes, "Because I mean it entirely as a compliment." He goes, "But as I sit here and listen to you do big league games," he goes, "you're the same guy you were in Pensacola." And I think that's really cool, because I thought then you were a big league announcer, and now it's cool to hear you actually do big league games. So it was, I did take it as a compliment. I thought that was really neat to hear that, because I can't change who I am. Baseball will expose you over the course of 162 games. If you're anybody other than yourself, that will come out. And as you said, it would be disingenuous.
So I have to ask before we move on, I'm sure we're going to talk about the Reds, and I think we might have to talk about bobbleheads. I mean, if I'm a good, you know, coworker to Burrell, we're going to talk about that. But what do you and the Cowboy do together? And when you're out and about together, do people recognize you?
Sometimes it's funny. I don't get recognized a ton, which is fine by me. It's anonymity can be a good thing. People definitely recognize him. He does quite a bit of TV, which certainly helps. He's a very recognizable figure. We don't have a ton of time to do a lot, but when we're on the road, and even during that COVID year, we went out to eat a lot, you know, because we were at home all the time. So there were times where, you know, we made it a point. We go, well, if we're not going to be on the road, let's make this a good thing. That's one of our favorite things to do, is go out, have a nice dinner somewhere. And Cincinnati has so many great restaurants. So we made a list and we're like, all right, we got to try all these restaurants in Cincinnati that a lot that he hadn't been to and several that I hadn't. So that is probably the number one thing that we like to do together is go out to dinner. We both shop a fair amount on the road. We don't necessarily do that together, but we'll share shopping stories. Hey, I was at this store, found this shirt or whatever.
Wait, so. Are you a fashionista? All right, the podcast is now going in my direction. We are good.
I don't think anybody that knows me would describe me as that. I guess I don't know when that happened, because I used to hate, and I mean hate, shopping. And if you ask any of my college buddies, when I stepped foot my freshman year on campus, I was the worst dressed guy probably on the entire campus. So, I mean, they used to give me a lot of grief for the way I dressed. So somewhere along the way, I started to enjoy shopping, probably just this job, because you have so much downtime. And when you're on the road, and especially in the minor leagues, we would stay by a lot of either malls or outlets. And so then you just find yourself, well, I've got a few hours to kill. I guess I'll stroll over to the mall. So now it kind of carries over. I guess the taste in clothing has probably improved a little bit over the years. But it's somewhere along the way that kind of happened. But now I probably still don't have that great of a sense of style. But, I do my best.
Well, I want to go back to the dining revelation that you gave us, because I'm going to put it out here now that if you and Jeff ever wanted to do a, limited engagement dining column, Tommy and the Cowboy eat out, we would publish that in a heartbeat. We would, no offense to our food writer, Keith, but that would be a great bonus feature. If that ever crossed your mind, you have a platform. We would host that in a heartbeat there.
I'm going to file that away. I might run that by when we get the season going. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Any excuse for us to go out and get dinner at great restaurants around Cincinnati, we'll take it.
Or if you ever wanted to do, your ranking or anything we'll figure something out. I'll have my people talk to your people. We'll figure something out.
That
all
sounds
right.
Do you have a favorite? We'll say one.
Oh man, it's so hard to just say one because there's so many great.
It is in different categories.
Right. Obviously all of Ruby's restaurants are phenomenal. I've been to all three of them and they're spectacular. But there is a little, there's a little Italian place, in Hyde Park that I. For some reason, it's just, and of course, the name escapes me right now because I just drive to it.
I bet it's Forno.
It's not Forno. That's another good one. I do like Forno.
Alfio's?
What's that?
Alfio's?
Alfio's. That's the
one. I love Alfio's.
I love it. Their short rib ravioli is unreal. There's times where I went there probably two or three times over COVID just because, try the best I could to keep local spots going, and they had a pretty good takeout service. So, but that, it's not too far from where I live. Their short rib ravioli is unreal. Occasionally, I'll just go in there, sit at the bar, have a cocktail, empanada or two, and some short rib raviolis, and that to me is a great night.
You would not picture them having empanadas, like if you're like, oh, Alfio's, but they do. Everything there is amazing. I am a big fan. It doesn't get its due, too. I'm so glad you said Alfio's. Yeah. It does not get its due.
I would agree, yeah.
Well, I had some more Tommy Thrall questions, but we probably should spend a few minutes getting from you your take on what this team looked like to you, because you were at every spring training game. What should fans expect? Who do you think the standouts are going to be? Just your general forecast of what Reds fans can expect from this version of the ball club.
Well, I think it's such a hard question to answer because it's obviously the question that I get asked probably the most. But it's a hard question to answer because there's so many unknowns with this team. And I think the fact that I have really quite literally no idea what to expect of this team as part of what makes it so exciting and so fun and looking forward to this season. They've got three really, really good starting pitchers. And if Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo, and Graham Ashcraft can stay healthy, well, teams have their hands full 3 out of 5 nights when they play the Reds. And that's not to take anything away from the other two starters. And, we've got some guys in the minor leagues that looked fairly impressive. Levi Stout, he's knocking on the door of the big leagues. I'm not sure if we'll see him this year, but there's a chance. There are some guys that I think make this team really exciting. Jose Barrero, he had a nice spring. All right, so it's worth being cautiously optimistic, but at the same time, there's still reason for some optimism there. In the outfield, T. I liked what I saw from TJ Friedel. I thought he made some big strides coming into spring training. But again, like with Barrero, there's a degree of unknown and unprovenness at the big league level there. We have a pretty good idea what to expect out of somebody like Will Myers, who the Reds brought over or signed in the offseason from the Padres. I think Jonathan India's due to have a nice bounce back year this year. I think the plan to keep Tyler Stevenson in the lineup is going to help him immensely, which in turn will help the offense immensely. So if everything comes together, I think this team has a chance to be a very competitive team and you know, maybe be around 500, which I think would be really exciting given the struggles of last season. If things don't go that way, well, then it could be a long season. But the thing is, we're going to start to see the progress of the organization moving forward with some of the young players that we saw in spring training. I think a guy that we'll see relatively soon is a guy like Matt McClain, who I was very, very impressed with this spring. Ellie De La Cruz has been somebody you cannot ignore, and he's knocking on the door. Christian Encarnacion Strand was phenomenal. And I know there were a lot of people saying, well, he should have made the team. Hard to make too much out of the early spring training results because he's seeing so many fastballs, as Cowboy talked about. And he was really having a lot of that success against minor league pitching, which, to his credit, those are his peers right now. But there's still some things for him to work on. So with all of that being said, there's reason for optimism. And if it doesn't all come together this year, I think the next few years after following this season have a chance to be really, really, really fun. And because of that, I think this will still be a fun year because we're going to see so much of that promise come to light this year. I'm excited about it. But again, no idea what to expect at this point.
Does that make your job more challenging because of you have a lot of young players? This is a transition / rebuild year, and you're just going to be dealing with a lot of different names, a lot of different stats. How do you prepare for that? What's your pregame preparation look like?
Well, I think that's a big part of spring training is you get to see a lot of these guys. So you kind of have some information on them already. You have an idea what they look like. You have an idea what kind of player they are ahead of time. So I guess you could say it's a little challenging, but to me, I just kind of look at that as part of the fun. And then there was a lot of roster turnover last year, and that was more challenging because there were a lot of guys coming through that were more unknown and that we didn't know as much about. So all of a sudden you find out, hey, this guy's here now, and he's in the lineup, and you start scrambling and just scrolling through pages on Google to learn as much as you can about some of these guys. I don't think we'll see as much of that this year because I think the guys that we'll see, there's going to be some of that. There's always going to be some of that. But, you know, I think a lot of the guys that we see this year are going to be a little bit more of known commodities within the organization. But, again, that's where I think the minor league experience comes in because there was so much turnover at the minor league level. So it's never going to compare to that.
All right. I just got a couple more questions before we let you go. And one very selfish, maybe add to the podcast purposes, assuming we can get it. Do you have, a call that you've made that you would say is your favorite classic Tommy Thrall call?
If
you had to put your highlight reel together, what would be the first call that you think, yep, that was a great play, I was on my A game, I'm proud of that one?
I was definitely not on my A game, which I think is part of the reason I maybe like it a little bit more. But I was pretty happy with the end of the Wade Miley no-hitter. I kind of liked the whole thing to some extent, you know, the building up of it over the course of the last few innings. And then there was another one, Tyler Malley, was actually a minor league call, because there's not many, I'll be honest with you, there's not too many that I really remember. I remember the ones I screwed up.
But, oh, how it goes with stories. People be like, that story you wrote. I'm like, what are you speaking of? And I'll look it up and I'll be like, I wrote that like 4 months ago. But you do remember the ones that are a little bit more problematic.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's funny how that works. I wish we could remember our successes a little bit more than our failures. But the Tyler Mahle perfect game in Double A was pretty fun. The problem was it was in Mobile and there was nobody there. So you felt like you were kind of talking to yourself, because the crowd, I think, always helps enhances a call, especially if you do it right. You know, the crowd plays a big part in that. But those are the ones that probably stand out the most. And then there was one in San Diego. The Reds hit a go-ahead home run in the top of the ninth inning, ended up losing the game, but it was the first time that San Diego had allowed fans back to full capacity, and it was sold out. And it's one that still eats me up, because I said the Reds took the lead in the bottom of the ninth inning instead of the top of the ninth inning. And that one really burns me, because it was up to that point, it was pretty solid. And I said bottom instead of top. And I mean, I wish I could articulate just how much it eats me up, but here we are. 3 years later, and it still burns me. So that gives you a pretty good idea.
well, maybe this recording this podcast with us, it can be cathartic for you. You can officially release that now and not lose any more sleep over it. All right. So the last question I have to ask you is, and I'll set it up a little bit. When Joe Nuxhall retired and stopped doing, I think he actually, this was slightly before he retired, but he stopped doing the post game show, and his sign off for the post game show was, of course, this is the old left hander rounding third and heading for home. And when he stopped doing that, Dave Collins took over and felt that he also had to have a sign off at the end of the post game show. And it was it reminded me of what Casey Kasem used to say, like, keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. But it was a little different than that. And it sort of like landed with a thud, because it was just like trying too hard, too cheesy. You know, you're never going to come up with anything as good as rounding third and heading for home. So just don't even do it. And so
the kind of saying they put on the side of a stadium, you mean?
Yeah, that kind of a thing. Do you think at some point in your future there will be a Tommy Thrall signature phrase that you're either concocting now and you're waiting to debut it, or you're just going to say something one time and you're going to go, yeah, I'm going to say that again. That worked. Or do you even think about things like that?
Yeah, I didn't really think about it till I got here. And, you know, I realized that there is a lot that gets put into those things, you know, with Marty's, and this one belongs to the Reds, Joe Nuxhall, as you said, and rounding third, heading for home. There was one I said one day, and I kind of liked it. And it's basically just, it comes kind of from the umpires, because, you know, umpires, everybody thinks, well, they say play ball at the start of the game. They actually just say play. And I remember one day I said at the start of a game, you know, Reds and Pirates, you know, let's play. And I kind of liked it. I thought, well, I kind of like that. So I try to kind of get that in at the start of a game, you know, great day for baseball, Reds and Pirates, a great American ballpark. Let's play, or hope you enjoy it. Let's play, something like that. So, I think I actually say it a fair amount. And I noticed that somebody caught on to it on Twitter and made a comment about it and said they kind of enjoyed that. So that's maybe if there is one thing, and I'm not huge on trying to come up with stuff for that very reason. I think it kind of has to happen organically, because I think if it doesn't, it's forced. And I think that's kind of how it all happened with Marty too. You know, that, I mean, this one belongs to the Reds. If I remember the story correctly, he said, he kind of said it one time, he goes, I like that. So it stuck. And I may be misremembering that, but that was one that, if there is one, I think that might be it. But otherwise, if there's stuff I say, it certainly wouldn't be something that I'm trying to do. Yeah, because like I said, because I think if you try it, a lot of times it'll sound forced and disingenuous.
Okay, so as we record this, tomorrow is opening day. We're so excited here at the Enquirer, where we're just, you know, feet from the ballpark. Could you do me a favor and just give us the practice line? What you like? Let's say let's play for tomorrow's game. Can you in your announcer voice?
Oh boy, yeah. Let's see if I can do it. Man, it's so hard because it's one of those things where you really just kind of, as you know, as a play-by-play guy, nothing's scripted ever really. So
oh,
it would probably be something, because tomorrow's supposed to be a beautiful day. So it'd probably be something along the lines of perfect day for baseball. Great day to get 2023 started. It's the Reds and Pirates opening day. Hope you enjoy it. Let's play. And boom, away we go. So probably something along those lines if I had to bet. But I think the other part of it too is just the enjoyment. I think all that comes through in your voice, you know, at the time, in the moment. And
agree. The crowd, everyone feeds the energy. The energy where you are, the energy matters.
Yeah. So I think that'll be, but it'll probably be along those lines, I hope. And I don't know if I did it justice there, but yeah.
Well, we'll be listening tomorrow. I can't go to the game. I actually will have it on the radio, which I don't always listen on the radio. It's the first opening day I haven't been to. I don't even know how long, but I will be listening on the radio because I have to drive somewhere.
Oh, man. Well, hopefully we keep you entertained enough on your drive.
Well, Tommy, we can't thank you enough. We know with opening day coming as we record this, one day away, you got a lot of preparation to do, busy schedule, but we're thrilled you had some time for us today. And this has been enlightening, and good luck this season. And if you need any bobbleheads that, you know, to finish up your collection, I have some connections. So
that's good to know. Yeah.
I thought you were going to ask him if he had connections, Burl.
Oh, no. No.
Actually, one of my real quick bobblehead stories. So I have one. A lot of times in opposing cities, they, you know, were there when they give away bobbleheads. There was one, we were in Montgomery, and they shared a bobblehead with the Braves. And so they gave away the same bobblehead. I said Montgomery, it was Mississippi. They gave away the same bobblehead they did in Atlanta. And it was a three guy bobblehead. It was, I think it was Glavin, Maddox, and actually Bobby Cox, I think were the three guys on the bobblehead. And I'm looking at it right now in my closet, and in one of my moves, two of the three guys broke off at their ankles, and it was one of the coolest bobbleheads. I went out of my way to ask for this bobblehead, and there it is in my closet, broken, and it's heartbreaking, because it was really one of my favorite bobbleheads, because there's three guys that you know, as a baseball fan, you can't help but admire. So that was one of the cooler ones, but unfortunately they got chopped off the legs. So
well, that happens. They are fragile. But well, maybe soon. Maybe soon I'll have a Tommy Thrall bobblehead to put next to my Brantley Cowboy bobblehead, just to.
Well, I guess for maybe another 15 years, maybe that'll happen, or 20 years, whatever.
All right. I thought you might break some news and this would be the season, but okay.
I don't think this.
No, I looked at the lineup. Sadly, there's no Tommy Thrall bobblehead this season, but hope springs eternal, Tommy. I think you know. Maybe Karen Forgas is listening to this podcast and she'll surprise you or something like that. So, all right. Well, thanks again, guys. And good luck this season.
Yeah, thank you.
This was
a lot of fun. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, I think that was a great walkout for him to kind of, you know, just, you know, tip his hat to what tomorrow's going to sound like. I'm so excited. So let me ask you, Burl, what is your favorite opening day memory?
Well, I have been so lucky to go to a lot of opening days. But I remember in the pre-internet era, pre third party ticket broker era, you know, how hard it was to get opening day tickets. And I remember camping out in the cold, waiting in line at Riverfront Stadium, which became Synergy Field, with my friends, pulling an all-nighter to get those coveted opening day tickets. I was just thinking about that the other day, that's what it took sometimes to get good seats for opening day. And the community of people waiting around outside in lawn chairs, sleeping bags, you know, you make friends and all of that stuff. And I miss that, because now when if you're trying to wait to get opening day tickets when they go on sale, you're sitting on your phone, pretending to do work in your office or whatever, or on your laptop.
Good thing you're the boss.
Refreshing your browser. It just takes away, I think, that kind of like, not, you know, it was a pain in the butt to go and try to get tickets that way. And it's much more convenient now. But I do kind of like think back fondly of waiting and, you know, camping out for tickets. And you know, I've done that for a few concerts over the years, but multiple times doing that for opening day.
I did that for my first concert with one of my friends who was older. I think I was in sixth grade. Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. And we had wait in line to go to Blossom Music Center in Cleveland. And we had to wait in line all night to do it. And my parents let me do it. But they trusted, because I was with somebody who had used to babysit me and was like old, like a little bit older than me. But that was how you got tickets.
You know, and we were talking before the recording how you just never know what you're going to get with the weather for opening day. A few years ago, I remember it was, I think, in the 20s with the wind chill factor. People were in their like heavy winter gear. And I've also been at opening day when it's been blue sky and t-shirts. And tomorrow, or as we record this, opening day is tomorrow. I think we're going to be somewhere in the middle, but leaning towards a good spring day here.
I already have my outfit all picked out, and it involves layers. Because I'm starting early in the day, because I have to go to the parade, and you have to come down at a decent time to be able to navigate downtown. And you have to get here early. I'm going to go to breakfast at Maplewood and kind of start early. But so tomorrow definitely involves layers. Fortunately, my office is right here, and I can drop some of them off if I need to.
And I also remember, it hasn't happened for a while, but I'm probably going back maybe 8 or 9 years. It seemed like consistently opening day fell on the same day as the NCAA championships for basketball, like the final game. So it was like the best sporting day ever, because you would like get up, you would go to the parade, start partying. Then you would go to the baseball game and you would have to pace yourself, because after the game was over, then you would have like a quick break, in your case, wardrobe change, I'm sure. And then watch the championship game for college basketball. So it was like a full day.
You even imagine at the banks what that would be like. Wow.
Oh my gosh.
My favorite opening day memory is just my first one. If you aren't from here and everyone is like, opening day is amazing and da 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 da, and people were like, you had like the court, I covered courts. They were like, Sherry, no one will be in this building. So, okay, I'm going to experience, like, you can't know till you know. It's like, if you know, you know. And I didn't know. And so that's my favorite one. The first one, because you, the magic of it, and just it all dawning on you how amazing the day is. And it's pretty special.
Well, I'm sure our listeners, many of them have their own opening day memories. We all, you know, it is, you're right, until you're here to see it. And I think that's what's fun too about the players themselves, if they're not familiar with what opening day is like here. I was listening to our friend Lance McAllister, who hosts Sports Talk on WLW. He was interviewing Sean Casey, former first baseman, you know, the quote unquote mayor of Cincinnati, because he was such a likable guy that made friends everywhere he went. He was asked, like, you know, what's your biggest memory for opening day, because I don't know if you remember this, but he found out on opening day that he was traded from Cleveland and ended up coming to the Reds. And so it was like, you know, change, put a new uniform on and run out on the field with a new team. He saw for the first time the opening day parade and how many people are downtown. And, you know, it's an unofficial, it's probably should be an official holiday from school, but it's an unofficial school holiday, unofficial work holiday. Everybody and anybody that loves the Reds and loves that tradition is blowing off work a little bit to come down, see the parade. You know, even if you're not going to the game, walk through the banks and see that spectacle. It is a sight to behold. If you grow up here, you sort of take it for granted. But even the players themselves are mildly blown away when they see what opening day is like here. So anyway, baseball season
is here. I got to get through this workday first, bro.
you must have a tough boss here. I'm going to have to talk to Carl. All right. Well, happy Reds baseball opening day, everybody. And we will see you next week.
Bye.